From the Ghost Knight Media Studios, welcome to the Paranormal Underground Presents podcast, where we explore the unexplained with our resident panel and our special guests.
Hey everybody, it's Karen, and we have a great show. Tonight we're going to be talking to Rex William from Destination Truth. But before we introduce Rex, I wanted to introduce our panel. We have some of the usual suspects and a new one as well. Our first panelist tonight is our editor-in-chief, Cheryl Knight. Hey, Cheryl.
Hey, Karen.
How are you?
I'm good. I am really excited to talk to our guest, Rex Williams from Destination Truth. That's one of my favorite shows, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Okay, our next panelist, you also know it's our publisher, Chad Wilson. Hi, Chad.
Hi.
You have a few questions for Rex, and I don't think we're going to have time for a panel tonight because we all have lots of questions. So we're also going to have him answer some questions that our members have asked. So last but not least, we have a new panelist sitting in with us tonight, and he's one of the members at Paranormal Underground. It's Richard Lombardi. Hi, Richard.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's an honor to be here.
Okay, so let's go ahead and introduce our guest. Our guest tonight is Rex William from Destination Truth. He's a medic who's ready to jump in if any of the team members ever get into trouble, and believe me, they do sometimes. He's been working in the field of emergency medicine for over 18 years, and he's trained and certified in several fields. Rex, welcome to Paranormal Underground.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. Thanks so much for joining us. I know that our members are really interested in your show, so I'm sure they'll look forward to hearing what you have to say.
So, excellent.
The first person who's going to be asking you questions tonight is our publisher, Chad Wilson. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Chad.
Hey, Rex.
Hi, Chad.
Hey, okay, I want to start out by asking you, how did you end up on Destination Truth this season?
It was actually quite luck, actually. I'd been doing some work down in the Los Angeles area as a set medic for various reality shows as well as commercials and cinema. Just being the first responder or the medical person on set for these various entertainment films, I happened to acquire an agent. Okay. In that area, and he was actually approached by Ping Pong Productions, which is the production company for Destination Truth, and they had contacted my agent requesting, you know, a set medic or a paramedic that would be willing to travel all over the world. Yeah, I guess I was the first one to pop into his head, and he gave me a call.
Huh. That's pretty cool. Well, okay, when you guys go on location, I mean, what is it like? Is it like exciting, frightening, or is there like a mixture? So I know you guys go to a bunch of different places.
Yeah, we do. It's very exciting, first of all, just to be able to go to different locations all around the world. And it's really exciting even more to go to these locations where, you know, most people don't get to go. The Great Pyramids of Giza and Bhutan, the Himalayas, all over the world. It's just fantastic to be able to go to these places. There's the excitement, and then there's the fact that you're having to care for all these people, and you're basically their person to go to whenever they're ill or if they become injured. So it's a lot of stress as well.
Yeah. Well, I know it'd probably be scary if all the different animals and stuff that you don't have, that's maybe not present in the States, you know, where poison snakes, stuff like that.
Now, oh, absolutely. I mean, I had to do so much research on every location that we were going to just to familiarize myself with what possible hazards are we going to be running into out there? What kind of scorpions, snakes, spiders, you know, the climate? We're going to be worrying about heat exhaustion or heat stroke, or is it going to be on the other end and we're going to run into, you know, hypothermia or frostbite? So yeah, there's a lot of research on my end as well.
Do you guys have some way, like if somebody was hurt badly, would you guys be able to medevac or something out of there?
Absolutely. We actually have a satellite telephone that we carry, that actually I carry with me to every location. Despite that, though, some of the locations are so remote that it would, you know, if something serious did befall one of the crew members, then even with a helicopter en route or that kind of communication, they may not even survive the trip out.
Okay. Do you guys carry weapons?
Actually, we do not.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we should. The only thing we kind of carry is a weapon, is a flashlight, and maybe a survival-type knife, and that's about it. Some of the locations, they're more, I don't want to say unstable as far as government is concerned, and you know, politically unstable or at unrest. We will have security guards that travel with us. And a lot of times those will be assigned one security guard with us, and he will be armed. That's about it. As far as any personal safety, you know, us carrying any weapons, that's no, they don't We don't allow it. No, okay. We're not allowed to do that.
What other roles do you fulfill besides medic on the team?
It's kind of funny you say that, because that's what I thought my first and foremost role was going to be, was actually medic. But to my surprise, I'm talking about production for the show, they kind of brought me into more of the investigative type role, okay. Which was really good for me. You know, I hadn't had a lot of experience at doing that kind of stuff before in the paranormal. So I learned quite a bit from these guys. So I played more of a role of an investigator. I did a lot of, you know, EVP work and video surveillance, working a lot with some of the gadgets that we carry with us.
Yeah.
And I had to kind of be cross-trained in a lot of that, okay. as well as what's required of you as a person in a production team, as a member of a, you know, production crew.
How many people are usually present when you guys are out there? Is this the people we see on TV, or are there actually more that we don't see?
Well, yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's you know, like Josh has said before on some of his shows, we run on a pretty lean crew. There's usually just the eight of us. We have a couple of camera operators, a sound guy, the medic, and then you have Josh himself, and then we have a couple of producers. We usually have the co-executive producer with us on the show, and then we have a field producer, a researcher, and that's pretty much it. We have one person that kind of goes around and goes to the countries ahead of us and makes sure all of our daily schedule is on track and what we have as far as lodging locations. You know, are we going to stay in a village? Are we going to stay in a vehicle overnight? Or, you know, what are we going to do? How are we going to get there? So all those logistical factors are pretty much set by this person that goes ahead of us.
Okay. So you said before that you never had done any kind of paranormal investigation before. Do you have any prior interest in the paranormal before joining the show?
Oh, absolutely. I especially cryptids.
Okay.
I've always been fascinated by cryptids ever since I was young. In fact, I live in Central California, and my family has a cabin up in the Sierra Nevada mountain range. Mm-hmm. My father's been taking me up there since I was young, since I was a baby. Okay. And I had actually had my own personal experience with what I thought might have been Bigfoot or Sasquatch.
Wow.
Even as a little guy, I was really interested. I don't know if you remember, there used to be a show called In Search Of.
Yeah, with Leonard Nimoy.
Exactly. Yeah. That was one of my favorite shows as a youngster. And, you know, Loch Ness Monster and all those creatures really fascinated me.
Do you want to elaborate on that Bigfoot Sasquatch sighting?
Sure.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was probably about 12 or 13 years old, and my parents and I were up in Kings Canyon National Park in the Sierra Nevadas in California. Our family has a cabin up there, and I had stepped out. I was the first one to awaken. It was probably just before the sun was coming up in the morning, and I walked outside and was kind of enjoying the peacefulness, and something caught my eye probably about 100 yards away between this thicket of trees.
Okay.
And I remember looking at it and thinking, what in the heck is that? And it was kind of just like a silhouette of, it looked like a man, or a very tall man, you know, maybe 8 feet tall and hairy. I mean, it looked like an ape, but it was, you know, had long arms, but it was standing up and not hunched over or anything like an ape. It was standing straight up like a man.
Okay.
And it scared the heck out of me, and I ran right back inside.
Yeah, I'll blame you.
So yeah, and then I've had another, you know, I've been out with my father fishing, and we'd stay out late in the evening time, and we'd be hiking back to our cabin, and we'd hear these sounds out in the canyon that we had never heard before. And I was like, Dad, what is that? And he's like, I have no idea, because it didn't sound like any type of animal call that we'd heard before or that he's familiar with. And he'd been, you know, in the mountains. You know, he was a Boy Scout, and so since he was a kid, he'd been up in the hills and in the forest, and he had never heard anything like that. It wasn't a mountain lion. It wasn't a bear. It wasn't any type of bird. It was just a real loud, almost like a roar and a screech kind of combined. Okay. It was really strange sound. But yeah, those are my early days experiences, if you will.
What has been your most extreme investigation that you've been on?
My most extreme, I would probably say Bhutan, when we were in search of the Yeti.
Yeah.
That was kind of Destination Truth's sequel to their first episode when they investigated for the Yeti in Nepal. And we were in a different area of Himalayas in Bhutan, which borders Nepal and India.
Yeah.
Just the fact that it's such a remote and isolated area was just really extreme for us. I mean, we had to take a bus ride, this little tiny bus,
yeah,
days to get from one end of the country to the other to where the preserve is.
Yeah.
They actually have a Yeti preserve there in the easternmost part of the country. Mm-hmm. That is just so isolated and hard to get to that it was pretty extreme. There was some of the travel we had to do by raft through the river, as well as it was about a two and a half day hike into the park.
When you guys come to the cliff, you actually had to rappel down. That wasn't just for dramatic effect. That was actually...
No, we did actually have to do some rappelling, yeah.
Yeah.
It was pretty scary.
Yeah. Have you ever... I'm sure you've done that before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have. Okay. But with the minimal equipment that we had...
Yeah. Like a box with some rope and...
Exactly. We had the bare necessities, and that was... That was a little more disheartening.
Yeah.
So can I break in real quick? Because I have a mm-hmm. question about that, because I just sure. watched that today. And yeah. what I wondered as I was watching that, did the translator rappel down too?
Yeah. Actually, our translator that stayed with us, he was kind of our guide. He was kind of a Sherpa
okay.
That was with us. And yeah, he was one of the guys that had all the equipment.
All right.
Yeah, because we only have so much that we can carry on us, and we actually yeah. have some other people that you might not always see on camera that are helping carry gear as well, just because we have so much surveillance equipment and then our own personal gear and then the medic gear and so on and so forth, that it's between the eight of us, there's no way. We probably have about 1,000 pounds worth of gear to haul.
That kind of leads into my next question. What kind of equipment do you guys use on location?
Well, we have two of our. Well, actually, we carry three. We carry two Z7Us, and then which is the really good Sony cameras.
Yeah.
And then we have a backup, which I think is the ZMU.
Okay.
Camera, and then we have a couple of astroscopes that we use for the night vision.
Okay.
And then we have basic infrared cameras that we carry with us that are fairly expensive, also, as well as all the cable for those.
Yeah.
And then the decks that we use to connect those cameras and, mm-hmm. and record. And then we carry like this, you haven't seen it yet, but on season 3.5, that's mm-hmm. going to be airing here in March, we added some new equipment to our investigations.
Oh, that's cool.
We actually use some motion sensor type equipment to establish some perimeters as well.
Okay.
So,
and also they use like the sound dish, you know, to catch the sounds and.
Yes, correct. We have the parabolic dish that our audio guy, Mike, he carries with us,
okay.
With him, and we use those for, you know, more deep, penetrating deep into the forest or the, you know, across the landscape mm-hmm. or into the canyons to pick up anything that we might not be able to see.
Say you guys encounter one of these cryptids or some other creature or animal. Uh-huh. In the wild. I mean, do you guys have some kind of contingency plan? Yeah. <you know? laughs>
What are we going to do?
You know, pick somebody down and run off.
Yeah, as long as you can run faster than the other person type thing. Before we set off on any night investigation, we have kind of a team meeting. And a lot of times you don't see that on film. We do a safety meeting for the viewers so that they know what we're having to go against and work in. But we have kind of a private team huddle before, and we discuss, okay, you know, if we do come across something that's right in front of us or, you know, we cross paths with it, this is what we're going to do.
Okay.
A lot of the times it's mostly we're not going to try to basically corner something that's wild and it's back and it's going to try to defend itself. It's not going to, you know what to do. So we don't, by any means, we don't want to force something to attack us and then thereby us having to protect ourselves and possibly harm the creature itself. We don't want to put the, you know, whatever we come across in that type of situation to where it would have to be hurt to save, you know, our lives.
I was just wondering why you guys, seems like you guys mainly investigate at night. Is there a reason behind that?
You know what? A lot of the people that we've talked to, a lot of the witnesses say that if they've seen a lot of these things at night.
Okay.
A lot of the things that we go after are nocturnal animals that may come out at night, but they also may come out during the day as well. We're thinking that if this is something that has a significant food source, and you know, if we have a chance to see it, it may be hunting at night.
Okay.
So for whatever reason, it's maybe there's a reason why people aren't seeing it during the day as much, you know, or there's a reason why this thing is so elusive and so hard to even catch on film. for example, when we did the skunk ape in Florida, mm-hmm. in the Everglades, yeah. we were actually lucky enough to spot and get on camera one of the wildcats there, the cougars that are yeah. rarely seen by biologists. Huh. And we actually caught a glimpse of that on camera, which was really, really impressive.
That's cool. When you start watching the show and they come out with the beginning of the show and it says Josh, you know, he throws together a team. He doesn't really throw together a team, does he? He does. That's just for TV.
Actually, you know what? That's what I thought too, but he really does.
Oh, does it?
It's his, if he wants you on the team, you're pretty much going to be on the team.
So he has a lot of say.
Absolutely. As the host and a producer of the show, for instance, when I went in and interviewed for the spot, it was with himself and Brad Coleman, the executive producer, with Ping Pong Productions. And those were the guys that were either yay or nay if you were going to be on the show. And then, depending on what they said, you in turn had to go in and meet with the executives at Sci-Fi, with the NBC Universal, the network, and have a little interview with them. And if they liked you and they thought you'd be great for the show, then you're in.
So I always thought that was made up. I didn't.
No, it was. It's pretty accurate.
Okay, cool. Well, that's all my questions. I appreciate you answering them for me.
And absolutely.
I'm going to turn you over to Richard.
Excellent.
Hey, Rex.
Hi.
Good to talk to you. I've got maybe 5 or 6 questions for you.
Excellent.
First one would be, how long does an average segment take to shoot once you get on location?
It varies. Usually, if it's a special like the Bhutan Yeti or the Nepal Yeti, those were an hour-long special episode. And the investigation, actually, we spent about almost 2 weeks on location for those. Typically, each investigation only lasts about a half an hour. That's why we incorporate 2 of them per hour-long, episode. With Destination Truth, those usually take about 5 to 6 days on location for shooting, and that covers. I mean, typically we have hundreds of hours of footage that they have to go through and edit and put together.
About your medical background, what is your ratings and so forth?
I'm licensed as in the state of California as a paramedic. It's a trade. It's I had to go through about a year and 2 months of paramedic training. And prior to that, it was required that I have my basic emergency medical technician certification, which is usually about 4 months. So it's almost, it's about a year and a half of schooling.
Somewhere along the same line, what is the worst injury that you've had to treat while on the show?
Let's see. We haven't had very many serious injuries, knock on wood. The most serious one we had actually was in this season coming up, but it's not shown on camera. We finished our shoot and getting ready to come home. So we had a day off and a bunch of the crew decided to go surfing. And one of our camera guys, Gabe, he took a step off his board, took a hard lick with a wave and tumbled down and stepped in a patch of sea urchins. And had a bunch of spines. He had over 15 spines stuck in the bottom of his feet and his legs, and was kind of scraped up. But that was probably the worst. I had to do a little bit of using the scalpel and numbing him up because some of them were kind of deep. So I had to actually go in there and dig into the bottom of his foot pretty deep. So he wasn't enjoying that. But Gabe, as far as another issue last season, we had Gabe fell off. His horse got spooked in one of the Peru episodes when we're in the Andes. I think it was the Haunted Lost City episode, and he took a spill off his horse and injured his knee. But luckily, nothing was broken and nothing too serious.
That's good. Does the team get accused a lot of being spies when you get into like the unstable countries?
As far as I know, they've only had that happen once.
Gambit.
And that was on a season prior to my being with the crew. I haven't really heard of any other instances of that happening. So, as far as I know, it's only been in one time.
I noticed in the past that the cast wasn't very constant. And is there a move towards a more permanent team?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, there always is. They always like to keep the same crew as much as they can. You know, especially sci-fi themselves, the network, they like to see the same people on there because the viewers, you know, they get to know these people and they kind of establish a relationship with the viewer. The viewers have their favorites and they're not so favorites. And, you know, it's good to have kind of some recognition in there. As the show's kind of grown that I've seen, I was a huge Destination Truth fan prior to even being on the show. So this was just like a dream of mine to be part of the crew. And I noticed that, you know, early on in when the Destination Truth show started airing, that they had a lot of changes with the crew. Since I've been on it, I know they've asked me to come back for another season, for season 4. But I actually regretfully had to decline that offer because my wife and I just had a child. And being gone on the road, it's really hard for families to, you know, have somebody gone for 3 months at a time. Or 2 months at a time, and I just couldn't see doing that with a brand new little one, and so I had to respectfully decline that offer. I think a lot of the guys, they've been asked to come back, and you know, things come up in your life, and it's not necessarily anything that has to do with the show. You know, it's you know, school or you know, family issues or what have you. A lot of times, you won't see the same cast members there. Or it may be other work that comes up and they're not able to commit to, you know, a 3 month tour of shooting. I know we had Jael last season, who was a great addition. She was a great gal to work with, a great researcher and translator and investigator. And a lot of the viewers liked her and she wasn't able to come back for a lot of the episodes on this new season that's coming up, 3.5. airing in March, but she does come back for a investigation with them, or with us rather. But you'll see Ryder again, Aaron Ryder from the previous season. She came back to do some investigations, so you'll see her again.
Going to that Romania episode where Evan was it who was thrown?
Yes.
How bad were his injuries?
You know, I think more emotionally. or more psychologically, you know, they were the worst. Physically, he wasn't so bad. I mean, he had some scrapes on his arms that were pretty significant as far as they actually drew blood. But as far as anything broken or you know, anything more serious than that, they weren't too bad. He was pretty shaken up about it. I wish that I'd been closer to the incident when it occurred. I was actually back at camp, actually even farther away from camp in the totally opposite direction from base camp to where he was. If you can kind of figure out a map in your head, we had base camp kind of in the middle. And I think it was directly looking at a map to the north and west was where Evan was sitting from base camp. And then I was completely south of base camp. So I had actually run when I was alerted via walkie talkie that something had happened. I had to run to base camp first and then through at base camp all the way to where Evan was. So it was probably a good 400 yards that I had actually sprint with a pack on my back and in the dark, you know, with just a headlamp, you know, through trees and whatnot. So it took me a few minutes to get there. And by the time I found him, some of the other team members were around him and he was actually, I would say, a good 50 yards from where he was originally sitting for the isolation session.
Right.
And he was just covered from head to foot in leaves and dirt. And I mean, he just looked like he had been literally, well, like what it looked like. I mean, he had been thrown and dragged through everything, through the brush. And so I was thinking maybe he scratched himself on some brush or whatnot, you know, when he took a tumble. But it just didn't really, you know, it didn't make a lot of sense. It wasn't logical because what he was wearing, a long sleeve that had the kind of like the thumb hook in it, like a thumb hole, and then he had gloves over that. So, and the thickness of the cloth that he was wearing, it would have taken more than a branch, and there was no holes or rips in his clothing at all. So that was really strange for me. you know, being the medical person and has seen countless numbers of injuries, you know, this was something that I'd never seen before. It literally looked like three claw marks that just went parallel with his arm. It was really strange. And he complained of it burning and itching, which is not normal with that type of, you know, if it was just a regular abrasion, which it looked like, a deep abrasion, that's not consistent with that type of injury.
Do you attribute all the rushing around to why you got sick?
I don't think so, because it hit me all of a sudden that when I got sick, that actually happened after the thing with Evan, and I was fine by that time. You know, I was feeling fine. I was kind of pumped up, you know, our adrenaline's going. And it just, no, I was feeling fine. Then all of a sudden it hit me out of nowhere. Just boom. I was just completely nauseated. I felt really dizzy and just immediately started out of nowhere. I didn't really feel it coming on. It just, I mean, literally it hit me so quick that all I could do, had time to do, was just bend over and, you know, let it loose.
All right. Well, thanks for letting me ask you the question. I'm going to pass it off to Cheryl.
Absolutely. Thank you, Richard.
Thanks, Richard. Hi, Rex. It's great to talk to you today.
Hi.
Hi. I just want to tell you that Destination Truth is at the top of my favorite list as far as paranormal TV shows is concerned. In your experience on the show so far, what are some of the best memories that you have?
We're so close as crew members. I mean, you're on the road with these folks for so long, they become your next family. And, mm-hmm. And you're going through these adventures that are just amazing and doing these really dangerous things that they become your best friends. Just getting to spend time with them and the camaraderie and this the feeling of accomplishment once you've, you know, had a good investigation is just priceless. You can't get that anywhere else. And right. And the fact that we can joke about stuff and not be totally serious, you know, the whole time is just, I think that's one of those things that makes the show so special.
So being the team has a lot of fun during investigations, such as when you guys were shooting arrows at the camera equipment in Peru. Can you tell us about some of the other fun times that we may not see on camera?
Yeah, actually, we have this game that Josh has bestowed upon us to learn and partake, and it's called the Game of Threes.
Okay.
And it's actually a Destination Truth original dice game.
Cool.
And it has helped us so much, and we get such a kick out of it. And we've played it in every country, in airports, on the airport floor, you know, in little cantinas or diners or, you know, wherever we're staying.
Okay.
When we got some time to kill and when we're trying to just relax and have some fun. And it's really a great game. We just do it for fun, and we use various different monies from the different countries. So it's kind of fun. Everybody has to put a dollar in, and it could be any type of currency, as long as it equals a dollar. So it kind of keeps our math skills sharp at the same time. So we're trying to add all these, you know, what's a dollar in pesos, you know, and
yeah.
or what have you, Chinese yuan, or, you know. As long as it equals a dollar American, then it works. But it's all just for fun. We don't, you know, we're not really gambling or anything. We're just having fun, and it's that's one of our little time wasters and let loose.
Right.
We'll do a little, you know, maybe do a little practical jokes on one another. You know, nothing too serious, but you may see somebody getting scared or whatnot out in the field, mm-hmm. out in the jungle. But, you know, it's just a good time. When it's time to get down to business and do some serious investigation, of course, we're on it. But, you know, you always have to have a little bit of lighthearted fun, too, along with that. Otherwise, you just go crazy.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I can imagine, because of the intense locations you guys are in, you have to have some fun. So that's great to hear.
These places that we're either in the jungles, like in the Amazon rainforest, when we're down there filming that episode you mentioned with Rob and Dustin from GHI, that was probably one of the most dangerous areas we'd ever been in. And, okay. you know, there or you know, in the hot deserts, and who knows, these caves that we're in. And I mean, they're all very dangerous to some ability. And when it's time to really get focused and do some serious work, then we're all over it.
Right.
And each member, they're so good at what they do that it's just everything just fits like clockwork, and it's just a really great group to work with.
You've mentioned the scary moments that you frequently have while filming. Can you talk about some of those? How do you react in those situations?
In episodes that we've already shot, some of the really scary incidences that's really stick out in my mind was actually when we were investigating in the Yucatan Peninsula of Mexico. Mm-hmm. And we were in the jungle area there. I mean, I'm deathly scared of spiders.
Okay.
And not so much snakes, but really spiders. And and it was so scary because we're out there with basically just headlamps, and we'd be walking by ourselves in this jungle, and we'd shine our light down the path, and we'd see like twinkling lights everywhere. And we're like, what the heck is it? Is it dew? You know, what is it? What is this, moisture on the leaves? No, they're moving. And upon a closer examination, they happen to be the eyes of the spiders.
Oh.
And
okay.
So it looked like a galaxy of stars twinkling out there, but they're moving, and those are all the eyes of the spiders that are, and these spiders are very big. They're not the little tiny ones you see in your house. these things were like the size of your hand.
Okay.
And they were all over everything. They're in our equipment bags. When we had to wrap up, we had to be real careful on sticking our hands into bags and whatnot, because a lot of these are very poisonous. You know, we had scorpions. And in fact, when I got home from the last journey that we had, I was going through my medic bag at home, and I found 3 dead spiders and a dead scorpion in my medic bag.
Oh, wow. So, okay.
That it stowed their little stowaways in my medic bag. So, yeah, that's pretty much the real scary, you know, having to deal with creatures, you know, the creatures that aren't really cryptids, that are pretty scary as well. I have to say in the Romania episode, that was a personal scary one for me, because Josh had sent me out to hook up some infrared cameras around the perimeter of base camp. Mm-hmm. And we're in the Carpathian Mountains, which is, you know, known and been told in stories for, you know, hundreds of years, dealing with vampires and spirits and hauntings and vampires and whatnot. And that particular episode, we were investigating the Romanian werewolf. Like I said, he had sent me off into an area that was kind of pretty far off from our base camp. And luckily, I was armed with a walkie-talkie and a flashlight.
Okay.
And and I was setting up this camera and near a graveyard, and no less. And I heard something behind me in a thicket, and I'm thinking, okay, there are really, you know, wolves out here, not necessarily werewolves, but there are very much real wolves out here. And I kind of played it off. Oh, it's just, you know, an animal, you know, that's not going to hurt me too bad. And, I'm making adjustments on the infrared camera and making sure it's in, you know, working correctly. And I hear heavy panting or breathing behind me.
Oh, wow.
And I just froze. I was so scared that I could not even move. Nothing. No, not a muscle in my body would move. And then I heard a really low, low-pitched, loud growl. And it was just kind of like a real breathy growl. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, I'm having flashbacks to every werewolf movie that I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. I bet.
and the hair stood up on the back of my neck, and I was just, you know, beyond frightened. I stood perfectly still and was hoping that Josh wouldn't try to get a hold of me on the radio, you know, because I didn't want whatever it was to know that I was, I mean, it probably already knew that I was there, but regardless, I didn't want any loud noises and to attract whatever it was. And I just, until I didn't hear anything anymore, and I slowly turned around and there was nothing there, and I just hightailed it out of there as fast as I could.
Glad you made it back. That's so, truly terrifying.
Yeah. Wow. It was very terrifying.
Have there ever been any locations that have just been too dangerous to investigate?
We've had some that I would say most people would classify as too dangerous, even though we did it anyway.
Okay.
For example, we investigated the Lusca in the Bahamas, in the blue holes that
yes.
That was a pretty intense episode. A lot of that, the diving that Josh and the crew did, into those blue holes. You got to keep in mind that these blue holes, these caverns that just network underneath the islands in the Bahamas and out into the ocean, they all connect some way or another. These things have not been, they've only been really investigated and mapped. I'd say about 1% of them have been mapped.
All right. Okay.
And so that leaves a lot of unexplored territory under these islands and these caves. Who knows what's down there? These are places that rarely see the light of day and don't see the light of day. So who knows what kind of animals and creatures have learned to survive in that environment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's obviously an ample food supply to sustain a large creature. So that was one thing that we could very well pass off as being, you know, have some validity to that, to their existence. So that was very, very dangerous. And not only for the fact that there could be a creature there that science has not discovered yet, but as for the fact that, you know, this is a very dangerous dive and very, very, very dangerous investigation, especially for Josh. You know, he's the real avid diver out of all of us and with the most experience. So he took the most dangerous dive out of all of us. And he went, you know, depths into, you know, about 100 feet or so or more, actually. Yeah, very, very, very dangerous, especially at night. I mean, just absolutely crazy. I mean, it was so dangerous that even the co-executive producer, Bisha Ghulam, he was like, if you don't feel comfortable with doing this, you know, he didn't feel comfortable with it. And so if there was any doubt in Josh's mind whether he was going to do this, they were going to scrap that. Yeah, so I think, you know, Josh is the super brave one out of all of us, and he's, you know, it's his show, and he... You know, he did what he had to do. He had to go down there and dive, and even though, you know, despite it being so dangerous, he did it.
You know, I watched that episode and I thought, he's crazy. Because going into this uncharted blue hole without much backup and in the dark. But that's why I like the show so much, too, is because it's pretty much you guys go into territory that not many others do. And so just, it's very compelling. And I think he's probably more brave than crazy. So
I don't know. I think it's about equal.
Equal. Okay. Let's talk about some of the other investigations that have aired so far, such as the haunted Romanian forest, King Tut's tomb, Chernobyl, which seemed pretty intense to me, the Bermuda Triangle and the Himalayas. And I know there's just a few, but the dangers, as you said, present on some of these locations are just really intense. And how difficult is it to investigate in these types of huge, dangerous, intense locations?
It's actually very difficult. I mean, we're always trying to keep in mind the dangers and keeping everybody safe on the crew. Right. But at the same time, you know, we have to make a television show too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we do what we got to do. And, you know, every show has its snafus, and the cameras go down and batteries go down and equipment goes down, and we work around it. And these guys, this crew is really good at doing that. We get what we need and, you know, get as much evidence as we can and stay as safe as we can. But, I mean, you brought up Chernobyl, and that was a big one. It seemed to be a pretty popular episode. And that was probably another real dangerous one that we did that kept everybody kind of on nerve the whole time. And it's difficult when you have to wear the gear anyway and try to get into these places and get as much evidence as you can, but throw on top of that any kind of protection, you know, protective wear, like the gear that we wore for the radiation to protect us in Chernobyl. That was, and then throw in the fact that it was super cold that night in Chernobyl. I mean, it was hard on everybody, and it was a very, very long night.
Yeah, I can imagine that one just seemed really intense, like you said. So, and it seemed like some things were happening in some of those buildings or rooms that were pretty scary as well.
Absolutely. I mean, there was one instance where Jael had something had touched her hand or mm-hmm. pulled on her hand, and we had heard a piano, some of the strings. I don't know if they let loose or mm-hmm. we disturbed something. And it had gone off. We couldn't really, you know, chop that up to being paranormal 100%. But,
right.
You know, it was things that had happened to us nonetheless that we could document and take back as evidence and examine, you know, later on. But that seemed to be when things got really active for us, is when we made our way into that school. And that's probably where we got most of our activity that night.
Right.
You know, I had spotted some figures on the thermal imager that were human type form, you know, a pretty far distance away that mm-hmm. we knew they were not any of our crew, and we knew nobody else was allowed there. So that was kind of interesting to catch something like that on camera. Josh had got a good image captured when he was using the thermal. I believe it was in the school as well, of a figure that was behind us. And I know there's been some talk about, oh, that was just a wandering crew member that was back there mm-hmm. that they happened to get. But that was definitely not the case. Everybody was huddled right together in the same room. And there was no mirror there. I think I had read on one website that they thought it was a reflection of a crew member in the mirror that the thermal was picking up. But however, that was not true. We debunked that. There was no mirror there. It was actually an open door. But I think it had a glass kind of inset in the door that had been broken out, so you could actually see right through the door. Okay. Like I said, the whole team was right there together. Everybody was accounted for, and we were actually all within that room. We tried to stay together as much as we could whenever we'd start investigating or clearing out a room and going over it with a fine tooth comb. That way there wouldn't be anybody wandering about. That's really important to us to keep it as contained as we can without any variables that we could chalk up to be, oh, you know, we could debunk that and say that was another crew member. You know, we try to keep it as a controlled environment as we can, so those things won't happen. And sure enough, that was pretty interesting. I looked at the footage again, and it looked like a form. And I thought, well, you know, maybe it was somebody, a reflection of somebody. And I looked, well, there's no respirator. We all had respirators on.
Okay.
And we were all carrying, you know, big equipment. So I think the only person that wasn't carrying equipment was Jael, and she was standing directly next to Josh. So
it seems like you work pretty hard at trying to come up with alternatives to the evidence that's captured instead of just going straight to, well, it's paranormal.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. We, you know, we're there not to just, you know, say, oh no, there's nothing paranormal. You know, mm-hmm. we're not trying to disprove anything or prove anything. We're trying to get as much evidence as we can to say, hey, you know, this is what's going on here. This is what people are seeing. And, you know, get as much evidence as we can. That's right. What we're trying to do. And if it's something that we can debunk, then yeah, we're going to try to debunk it. And right. we're not so quick to say, oh yeah, that's a ghost. You know, if we come up with nothing, which I'm sure, you know, it happens. I mean, right. You don't always, even anybody who does any kind of, you know, ghost investigation or haunting investigation, a lot of times they come up with absolutely nothing. There's, you know, nothing's happened to them. They have no evidence. So, you know, it's not all about getting something every time.
Right. Well, you had mentioned the Bhutan Yeti episode when you were talking to Chad a bit ago. And that's the investigation where the team found hair from a previously unidentified primate, if I remember correctly.
Correct.
Is that something that the team strives for while out on location? So not just to dispel some myths or legends or capture evidence of cryptids or paranormal encounters, but also to find something concrete like that, because usually in paranormal investigation, it's hard to find something concrete, but yet your team has done it. And so how does that feel when something like that happens?
That was such an amazing, I get chills just thinking about it. I'm getting chills right now when you brought the hair sample up, because that is such a huge, and it seemed like it was so downplayed, which it really kind of, you know, put a damper on it, but it this was a big find, and you know, that's right up there with this this footprint that they found in the first episode when they investigated Nepal. that was a big find too. And that made the international media. And to find a hair sample that we thought, oh, maybe it's probably just a yak, you know, hair or
right.
Horse hair or something that had brushed against a tree. And to find out that was actually something significant was just mind blowing. And,
right.
and
yeah.
for them to, you know, for them to have this database with all the different DNA samples, you know, that have been cataloged, and to have it be something that's unknown, but yet primate, is just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely amazing.
So the unknown primate hair, you mentioned the footprint mm-hmm. in Nepal. What other big finds do you think the show has uncovered since it started?
Oh my gosh. I would say those were the two biggest.
Okay.
But as far as the paranormal and hauntings go, I really liked the evidence that we got that we brought back from Mexico from the Island of the Dolls episode.
Okay.
That I don't know if you've had a chance to look at that one or not, but
yes.
The just with the dolls eye opening was just, I mean, just gave me chills and
pretty it was freaky. Like,
yeah, just a tad bit freaky. And it's funny because I like to read, you know, people's blogs and posts and whatnot and in these forums. And, mm-hmm. and it's funny to listen to some people discuss it and they're like, oh, well, they had it, you know, rigged to where, you know, they had some kind of mechanism inside the doll. It's like, really, folks, we bring our own special effects. Come on, you know,
yeah.
No, I don't think so. These old dilapidated dolls that have been there for, I don't know how many years. And I know how dolls work too. And I know that those dolls can, when you lay them down, they open their eye or they close their eyes. When you lay them up, they open them. I guess those are those old dolls that would do that.
Right.
And I know they have that mechanism in it, but just out of nowhere, you know, when nobody even touches it, mm-hmm. come on,
yeah,
you know, so it's like that was just utterly creepy. And the EVPs that we got in the shed and when we did our isolation sessions, which I it's worth mentioning, they had never really done any type of isolation sessions like that before. It's kind of a new thing that they've incorporated
mm-hmm.
With a team. And it's really worked well to be able to have one person sit there in isolation and experience their own personal experiences there and have the rest of the team monitoring everything from, you know, what's happening in the room with the person to, you know, keeping in contact with the person and seeing them on camera the whole time.
Right.
And on audio, a lot of times it's kind of a good way for us to debunk imagination, you know, for example, for this person that's sitting there. Because of course their imagination is going to start going wild. They're going to start hearing things being, you know, in this setting.
Oh yeah. Okay.
But it's great to have, you know, the rest of the crew monitoring the person that's in isolation because we can, you know, verify what they're experiencing firsthand.
Right.
You know, if anything's moving or there's any type of activity within, you know, the confines of their location, then we can absolutely verify it.
Right. Yeah. I think that probably helps a lot to rule out things that maybe they're a little jumpy and
right.
something natural as opposed to something that could be paranormal.
Exactly.
So yeah, I really like those sessions as well.
Good.
Let's talk real quick about Josh Gates.
Sure.
He's as we've already talked about with the blue hole diving and such, mm-hmm. he's gotten himself into some pretty intense and even really dangerous situations during the investigations.
Yes. Yes.
And I remember like when he was sinking in quicksand, I think it was in Peru.
Uh-huh.
And he calmly said, "Help me! I'm sinking in quicksand." or when he was on the motorboat in the triangle, and the motor dies,
mm-hmm.
and you know he's trying to get back to shore and not mm-hmm. drift away out to sea. But
right.
has there been one moment where you thought that a team member might not make it back from that dangerous situation?
you know what we. We always have type of, you know, contingency plans like we were talking about earlier with
mm-hmm.
we're, you know, what happens if we run across something
mm-hmm.
And probably, you know, just thinking back to all those different investigations, God, there's been so many now, with these two seasons. I would probably say the diving, the Blue Hole investigations okay. were the most dangerous. I mean, I'm thinking, well, you know what? That's not fair. I'll also say the Romania episode where the roof of the aircraft flew off in mid-flight.
Oh, yes. That was, wow.
Yeah. I mean, Josh put it pretty well. They thought it was that was going to be the last episode of Destination Truth was right there. Okay. Those two were probably the most hair-raising experiences that I've seen, okay. you know, personally with the team. And that was pretty serious to where, you know, we're like, you know, did that really just happen? Cause that right. could have been, you know, totally disastrous. And,
right.
and when Josh went down in the Blue Hole and diving and we lost contact with him, that was just insane, sure. crazy. Yeah. Right. Insane, dangerous. And just, I mean, I wouldn't want him to do something like that again.
Okay.
Absolutely. Being in charge of his well-being.
Yeah. Well, okay. My last question for you before I turn you over to Karen for the reader questions.
Sure.
Can you tell us in all of the investigations that you've done so far for the show, which one has been your favorite and why?
I would say the King Tut episode mm-hmm. and being able to spend that much time in his tomb at night, which nobody ever gets to do.
Right.
I mean, just that in itself, having to have special permission granted from the Egyptian government just to be able to do that was just amazing. And having, you know, there's so much mystery to that country and there's just so much history. Mm-hmm. I mean, to that area of the world that just, I mean, you're talking thousands of years and,
right.
and that in itself, just to be able to, you know, I'm standing over, you know, his mummy and I'm like, I'm standing over King Tut right now,
right,
you know,
right.
you know, it's just, even some of the other mummies, it's like, you know, this guy was in the Bible, you know, and I'm standing over his body right now. This is just amazing, unbelievable. And in seeing how well preserved a lot of the inscriptions and hieroglyphics were in his tomb is just amazing. A once in a lifetime experience for anybody.
Did you do an isolation session in there, if I remember correctly? Were you one of the ones to do one?
We all did a short period of time. And okay. you know, every crew member did one. The ones that actually we had time to fit into the episode itself after editing, I believe it showed Josh and of course Mike, because he had his episode of a difficulty right. breathing down there.
Right.
I can't remember who else they actually showed in the episode, but we all try to get in there and have some okay. time in there. Yeah, absolutely.
Did you, I seem to remember that some of the investigators were hearing unexplainable voices and mm-hmm. things actually in the tomb with them that they couldn't explain. Did you have anything like that happen in King Tut's tomb?
Absolutely. Okay. In fact, when there's a scene where Josh and I go down into the tomb and we're taking some EMF readings with the tri-field meter and we're getting some strange hits on that meter as well. And we hear something and it sounded like, I don't think it was ever picked up on audio on our audio end, but we heard it ourselves with our own ear. It sounded like people chanting and it didn't sound like it sounded like it was in a foreign language. It didn't sound like it okay. was in English.
Interesting.
Which was, yeah, very interesting. And then we heard voices and we couldn't understand what they're saying, but then we heard sound like footsteps. And that's when Josh and I bolted to the door and found Bisha. I guess he'd been coming down and we kind of chalked it up to maybe it was him that we were hearing coming down the long staircase into the tomb and where he became kind of overcome with stomach pain.
Right.
All of a sudden it actually fell to the ground. And I think that's what we yeah. heard ultimately is what we heard and went running for him. So we had a lot of strange things happen that we couldn't explain. I mean, the big thing that was really strange for us was the sandstorm just out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that was like, I remember hearing somebody saying in a forum, oh, they just brought a big fan
Don't you love that?
It's like, I know. It's like, okay, people, I know, you know, you've seen a lot of TV and they do use a lot of that stuff in movies and yeah. whatnot, but we're not going to carry this huge fan across the desert, you know, right. hiking it on our back. But it's just amazing. I mean, I had never been in a sandstorm before, so I didn't really know what to expect. And it was just blinding. I mean, it was the sand is just blowing in your face and it's blowing at all of our equipment. And
right.
and it was kind of sad as well, because they had actually had a dig that was in progress, of course, at night. So nobody was there, but it was roped off, and an archaeological dig near there. And a lot of pottery and whatnot had been taken out and placed in this roped off area. And they had some umbrellas up and canopies up that to protect it. And the wind came, you know, that sandstorm came through and just broke a bunch of that, those artifacts, which was just, wow. I was so sad because
that's too bad.
You can imagine. So definitely not a faked, dust storm or a sandstorm. A lot of strange stuff happening.
Sure. And just for the record, because, you know, a lot of people put this kind of thing out there, but nothing – is anything ever staged on the show?
Absolutely not. No.
Okay. Okay.
No, absolutely not. What you see is what you get.
Right. Okay.
That's the reality aspect, because, I mean, it is reality television. And you know, you hear about it, well, I don't know so much of it's reality. That being said, pretty much what you see is what you get on the show. You're getting to experience, which is another thing I like about this show, is you're right there with us, and you get to pretty much experience what we get to experience, you know, what makes the editing. And it's you could make a 4-hour show with, you know, easily
right.
with
the
amount of stuff that goes on, but we have to, unfortunately, have to cut it down to 24 right. minutes, you know, at a per investigation. So.
Well, I'm really looking forward to the new shows coming up. I really thank you for giving us these insights with your experiences on the show. So thank you so much. And
absolutely.
I'm going to turn you over to Karen.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Cool. Back to me. So you guys must just absolutely be in monster shape.
Yeah, pretty much. If we're not in shape, we get in shape very quickly on the show.
So I have some questions for you from some of our readers.
Sure.
Okay, so the first one is from somebody who wishes to remain anonymous in case his wife is listening, but he wants to know if Jael is adorable in person.
She is absolutely adorable in person. She is beautiful, and she is such a sweet person.
Okay.
Absolutely.
There you go. Okay, so Dover Demon wants to know, who determines how long you stay on the expeditions?
That would be up to for the production staff, and we're on a fixed budget, so we go as long as the budget allows.
Okay. And he also wants to know, so when you do an investigation of a location, what mm-hmm. percentage of your investigation actually winds up on the show?
Oh, what percentage of the investigation? Well, I had mentioned earlier, we shoot per investigation, and that's like, let's like, let's just, for example, the King Tut's tomb investigation. That one investigation, that one night in itself, we filmed hundreds of hours, and that's literally hundreds of hours mm-hmm. of footage that we have to go through. Could be only because we have multiple cameras and we're shooting, you know, all the time, because we never know when something's going to happen.
Right.
So we're always rolling, and it's a nightmare for the editors because they have these, you know, the ungodly amount of hours of footage that they have to go through. And so, I mean, to put a percent on it, I mean, you're seeing 24 minutes, you know, once you take out the commercial time, you're seeing, it comes out to about 24 minutes of actual footage that's aired. And, you know, out of hundreds of hours, I mean, you right. do the math.
yeah, definitely. So he also wanted to know, you were discussing earlier the primate hair that was found. Now, is there anything new on that? Have they made any new identifications, or is it pretty much as we saw it on the show?
It's pretty much as it was shown on the show. You know, as soon as anything new comes, any new developments come, as with any of the investigations, they'll definitely either do some type of return to, like we did with the Yeti, or you know, with the footprint, and then we came back and did the second episode, a 1 hour right. special. And you know, I'm sure they'll do some type of update on that. Definitely, you know, it's kind of tricky with those things. They science likes to have multiple, you know, similarities there. That
they want it to be repeatable. Is that what
exactly
you're trying to say? Right?
Exactly. You know, they want multiple examples of the same evidence. So it's not just a one you know, one time deal.
Our resident medic, we have a paranormal underground medic, although he just has to deal with paper cuts and things usually. But, his name is Ryan, and he wanted to know what protocols you're under.
I'm actually not under any specific protocols because I'm working internationally, and I work under the license of a physician that's located in Los Angeles. So my scope of practice actually can go a little bit farther as long as I'm, you know, actually not out there performing surgery or anything like that, you know.
Right.
I'm basically working under his license. And if anything, you know, that I needed any type of, if anything arose to where I need any kind of help, then I would just, I'd immediately dial this physician, you know, 24/7 and he could instruct me on anything that need, you know, life-saving, and while we're abroad. So yeah, we don't, it's kind of interesting because we don't really, I did some research into that and there's not really any scope of practice that falls, you know, outside of the country. So it's kind of strange. Yeah.
So the other thing he wants to know is if you have extra skills that you wouldn't normally have in the field, like do you use sutures and that type of thing?
Right. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I've actually been, I've taken some classes on suturing, and so I'm able to do sutures and excuse me, and give some medications that normally a paramedic wouldn't give, like antibiotics.
Okay.
So you know, I have had to do that actually a few times. I had to give some to Josh and to Gabe and some of the other crew members. I had to give them antibiotics for certain injuries that they've sustained or infections that they've been sustained you know, while on our adventures.
You're almost like a corpsman in some ways.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So his last question was, he wants to know, and I think I know the answer to this from watching the episodes that I've watched, but he wants to know if there's an accident prone person that you need to keep your eye on.
Last season, I would say it was Shara.
Oh, that wasn't my guess. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Shara had a lot of things going on with her as far as the injuries and things like that. And then this season, I would say it was Ryder. Ryder had a lot of bumps and bruises and things happened to her. So,
okay. A couple more reader questions, and then I have a wrap up question for you. So Sympathy okay. for the Devil wants to know if anything ever came of the analysis of the Yeti footprint.
From the last one, I think the only, the analysis that they originally, received was the last that they've, you know, they've any information that they've had. I don't think it's been updated since then.
Is it at Disney World?
Yes.
Okay. So that's not a rumor. That's true.
That is true. Yeah.
And she also wanted to know if you had any plans for a Q&A with the show, on the show with the cast, like a Q&A show.
Oh, you know, with the rest of the cast?
Yeah.
I think that'd be a great idea. It's just a matter of locking them down. I know they're super busy. Especially Josh. I mean, this guy, he does it all. I mean, he knows what he wants in the show. And when he comes back from doing all this work, you know, on the traveling and investigations himself, he actually sits down and does a lot of the editing himself. So not only is he real super, you know, involved in the filming, but he's really involved in the post-production as well.
Cool.
So I think it'd be a great idea. And as you know, I know Josh is always up for doing some Q&As, and it's just a matter of finding the time and locking it down.
Cool. So tell me what to expect on season 3.5.
You can expect a lot more hauntings, a lot more haunting investigations.
Woo-hoo, that's my favorite.
Oh yeah, and it's really cool because we've gone to some really great locations that are pretty well known, and are a lot of firsts for us. You can expect a haunting investigation at the Great Wall of China.
Really?
Absolutely.
Excellent.
And that's going to be a really good one. We actually got to spend the night on the Great Wall of China and got some really great evidence that you'll have to wait and see. also, we did, let's see what else. We do have some creature investigations as well.
Cool.
For all the cryptid fans. Let's see. For those of you who like the Sasquatch or the Yeti or Bigfoot, we did an episode in China as well on the Yeren.
Come up to the Pacific Northwest. This is the heart of Bigfoot country.
I agree 100%. I absolutely agree. I would love to do that. There's just been so that, I mean, that is Bigfoot country.
It's the epicenter. You're right.
Absolutely. I think that'd be great. I mean, and you know, the Pacific Northwest and Canada and those areas are just, that would just be a great location. I absolutely agree.
It is.
So the Yeren in China, which is a really great one. Trying to think where we had it. There will be a haunting that we did in Chile this next episode or this next season. I'm not sure when it's going to air, but we did an episode in Chile in this old abandoned ghost town and cemetery location that will just blow your mind with what you see as far as evidence. It's going to be a really great one. I guarantee it. And we did some isolation sessions there and we have some great guest investigators with us. We have Allison Scagliotti from Warehouse 13 on Sci-Fi. She attended one of our investigations.
Cool.
And we had Chris Williams from Ghost Hunters.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, she she accompanied us on the investigation for the New Jersey Devil.
Oh, cool.
So that will be a great episode as well.
So I know that you're not coming back for season 4.
Correct.
Do you think that this investigation, because you didn't do it before you joined Destination Truth, do you think that you might be more inclined to investigate some things from here on out?
As far as on my own personal time?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I've already joined a paranormal group down in Southern California.
That's what I wanted to hear.
And I joined them right after season one, or I'm sorry, season the last season, season 3.
What's the name of your group?
West Coast Paranormal.
Okay.
Yeah. And yeah, a bunch of great people, and I give a shout out to them. And they Troy Tackett, he's the team leader for that group, and he was actually if you look at some of the earlier episodes of Destination Truth, he the show came to him with some of their EVP evidence and had him analyze them.
Oh.
So he's actually on the show, and that's actually how we met. So I thought that'd be the group to go with, and so I've had gained a lot of experience with them, and I'm planning on continuing it. So
yeah, it's kind of like a bug that bites you, isn't it?
It is, absolutely.
Once you start, it's really, really hard.
It's hard to stop. It is.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, so down in Southern, it's in Southern California?
Yes.
Well, that's where Cheryl and Chad are located.
Really?
Yeah, they're down there in Fullerton.
Yeah, oh, great. Right by Disneyland. Not too far away.
Well, then you're probably familiar with the Anaheim White House.
The
restaurant there.
It sounds really familiar, but I honestly don't know if I've ever been there.
Yeah, that's actually that we did an investigation there. I actually did an investigation there with the team. It was an old hospital, I believe, before, and they've converted it into a restaurant, a really nice restaurant. It's right across from Disneyland.
Huh. Oh, cool.
In Anaheim.
I'll have to check that out.
I'll probably say it when I go to work.
You probably drive right by it. Well, very cool. What are you going to be doing then professionally once you are done with Destination Truth now? The whole season's been filmed, correct?
Right. Correct. Well, for the time being, I'm done taking a hiatus with them, and I'd be glad to come back on later shows in the future if they'll have me, and so I'm looking forward to that. But as far as things go right now, personally, I'm currently in nursing school, I definitely need to make more money. It's
don't we
all? There's a lot more money in nursing than there is in working ambulance. So. I'll be pursuing my career in nursing and then further on into family nurse practitioner, which requires a master's degree, and so I'm working on that, and I'm doing some side television work. I'm not totally leaving that industry, so I'm going to be hopefully pretty soon assisting in producing a paramedic show. And it's reality style, kind of like in the way Cops is filmed.
Show
Cops, but it's going to be with paramedics. So hopefully that'll take off pretty soon. So
you have some irons in the fire.
Absolutely, sure do.
Yeah, good, cool. Do you have a website or anything that our members can go to if they want to learn more about you?
Actually, the only site I have right now is my Facebook site. I do have a fan page on Facebook, and it's just under Rex Williams. And look for me on there. I have a discussion session where I go over a lot of the investigations that we've been on, as well as the equipment that we use, and any updates. So if they want updates on Destination Truth or anything that's going on with our investigations, you can certainly join that group.
Terrific. Well, I hope that in the future, as you do paranormal things, you'll stay in touch with us and sort of let us know what you're doing.
Absolutely. I sure will.
Cool. When's Destination Truth supposed to premiere in March?
It will premiere March 17th.
Okay.
St.
Patty's Day. Yeah. Which will open with our Leprechaun episode.
Oh, there you go. What a tie-in.
Yeah. That'll be at 9 o'clock Eastern.
9 o'clock Eastern, I believe. Yeah. Oh no, I'm sorry.
10 o'clock.
Well, it's 10 o'clock Pacific.
I think it's 10 o'clock. Oh yeah. I think if you have satellite, it's earlier.
It varies. Right. Yeah, it varies.
Check your local listings, folks.
Yeah, I just want to say that everybody can check the Sci-Fi website, and it'll give a listing of the shows, what's going to be aired, and what investigations we're going to be covering on what night. And you can look forward to seeing us in the countries, Israel, Jordan, of course, China, like I'd mentioned, New Zealand, and some in the U.S. So it'll be really exciting.
Looking forward to it. Very much so.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to thank you for taking the time to talk to us, and also wanted to thank Cheryl and Chad and Richard. Thank you guys all for coming on and doing this. This has been a lot of fun.
I enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Rex.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a lot of fun. Thank you, guys.
Paranormal Underground Presents is a presentation of Paranormal Underground and Ghost Knight Media. For more information, please visit www.paranormalunderground.net or www.ghostnightmedia.com.